and welcome to this edition of the Bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy, and with me is Tom Chabria. Tom, how are you doing today?
It's a Wednesday. You know, it's not or Wednesday. It's a Thursday. Excuse me. Pardon me. It's a Thursday.
The week is slipping by so quickly.
I know. Sports are just kind of like meh right now. I mean, we got tons of great Texan talk, but all the other guys aren't really doing anything crazy. World Baseball Classic has been really interesting. I managed to get out to a game. It was pretty cool. So, you know, check that off the bucket list. But other than that, man, the Rockets L was so bad that, like, I'm like trying to get over that.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say when I turned it over to you, I was going to say, let's hear the H-Town Rundown. And then I remembered that there's a Texans podcast called the H-Town Rundown. I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to like step on their thing. We have to come up with a term for it in the offseason when we're talking about all the other things that are going on in Houston sports. But yeah, just not a lot else going on right now, except for free agency. It seems like the whole rest of the league has kind of cleared the way for the Texans to have their day and build the team and everyone to be super critical of it. So before we dive into all the signings that they've made, just overall, where are you at? Like, walk me through the progression of your thought process as the Texans made moves and started adding players and how you feel about what they've done so far in free agency.
I think all the anti-Caserio people, Caserio, you know, isn't the guy to get it done, are really quiet right now because he's having a phenomenal offseason. I know he says there's no needs, but he's addressing what everyone else feels is a need. And he's really going in there and doing a good job and just checking a lot of boxes to be able on draft day to take the best player available. And the scariest teams are able to do that because they get unreal talent that they don't have to fit boxes. They can just go get a guy and find a way to plug him in. And I think the Texans are going to be in a really good position come draft night. It'll be really interesting to see what they do. A lot of people are now thinking they could trade up as before. Most people thought, oh, well, they're for sure trading down. And it's like, you know, trading up, you get a real impact player. So I can't say enough great things about Nick Caserio and the job he's done this offseason, being able to just manage all the different gymnastics, whether it's a restructure or a re-sign or a trade. Like there's just been so much good that we're going to talk about, and there could be more good that our seasons. I don't want to mess that up. I'm sorry if I did, but he's talking about it too. There's more things that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's taken a few off seasons to build this expectation for me. Like, just to understand, like each off season, more and more, I'm like, well, Nick Caserio is this way, but maybe this is the off season where he just goes off the rails. And to be fair, in the past couple off seasons, I feel like there's been more of a splash move than there's been this off season. So anyone who's frustrated with Nick Caserio is probably more justified based off of that expectation, right? Because like people that don't run a football team look at what the Texans are doing and they go, Nick Caserio has an obvious need here, so we should spend $30 million at this spot per year, and spending that amount of money will fix the problem. And Nick Caserio has never operated that way. So in the context of what Nick Caserio is, I think that he's in his bag this offseason. I think that he has made all of the moves that are typical of how he would address what's going on with his team. I think he's getting incredible value. Braden Smith at tackle, after it looked like they re-signed Trent Brown and it looked like, oh, well, we're going to run back the same offensive line. He goes out and get Braden Smith, who the Texans view as a tackle, that's been reported by Aaron Smith, although Lance Zierlein did speak to the fact that he played a lot of guard in college and, in fact, is one of the rare cases of switching from guard to tackle at the pro level, and the Colts made that work really well. But Braden Smith is huge value. I really like a lot of the moves the Texans have made, and as someone who ignore the last decade of evidence, yeah, Brandon, as someone whose favorite part of the offseason has always been the draft, in my head, I'm like, the Texans should really save one of these positions and address it. And a lot of people don't like the idea of a rookie starting on the offensive line, but I like the idea of setting it up to where if you like a guy in the draft to start, going out and getting that guy. Now, the only thing I think hasn't happened yet that is probably going to happen. I mean, there's a lot of teams interested in Wyatt Teller. Joel Bitonio is still on the market. I think it's likely the Texans add a veteran left guard, but I wouldn't be mad if they didn't. I've said it at this point in the offseason. I think what they've done in free agency to me is at least meets like the minimum threshold. Like if it ended right now and they didn't add that veteran left guard, it would put a lot of pressure on that move in the draft. But I think that the Texans have the capital. They have the ability to move. And we'll get into it later. I looked at your mock draft briefly when you sent me the picture. It's a lot of picks to make in the first four rounds. And understanding that players that are picked in the first four rounds generally make the Texans roster. That's been the one consistent thing. I'm going for quality over quantity. And if it means giving up assets to get higher up to get players. So for example, Vega Ione, the guard out of Penn State, to me is the best fit and the best guard in the draft. So if the Texans are not going to add a veteran left guard, this is a guy who played left guard all of college, rates really well in the gap scheme, is a really good pass blocker, just really fits what the Texans are trying to do. If you get to that point where you think that you could want to draft a guy to start at left guard, all signs point to, okay, well, we don't need to make 13 picks in the first four rounds. If we end up making four picks in the first four rounds, which would be less than we have now, I think that's fine. I think we made two or three picks in the first four rounds. As long as they were quality guys, I'm okay with moving off of a lot of that, those assets. Cause look at this Texans roster. What position do they truly need to stack a whole bunch of talent at? We're looking at a potential starting center, someone to challenge Jake Andrews in the draft at this point, since they haven't signed one. We're looking at a starting left guard, at this point. And then what other high quality player do you want to get that could potentially start? Miles Bryant hasn't been re-signed. You want some quality depth at other positions, sure. But if we're using the draft to get starters, the amount of picks that you need to make in the first four rounds to me is not as high as it's been in the past. So I think this Texans team is in prime position to use the draft to fill what needs are left. So I don't think they're done. I think there's more that can be done in free agency. But if it ended right now and the Texans didn't address anything else in free agency, I think they have the draft capital to move around and make it work. Do you want to risk it at this point? I think it'd be better to have someone signed to play left guard. Like if you went into the season with Wyatt Teller at starting left guard, that opens up a lot of possibilities. Both Tom and I, to kind of give you a preview towards the end of the show, had Emmanuel Pregnon as our first pick in the draft. I took him in at 28. I think you traded out of 28 and you took him at 38, but we both took him high. That's a guy who a lot of people think could probably need to sit for a little bit. So you get a veteran left guard that takes the position and then you expect Pregnon to walk into it at some point in the season. I mean, there's just a lot of flexibility what the Texans can do. And to kind of bring the thought to a close, I've been rambling for a minute now. Nick Caserio, for the kind of GM that he is and for what he does and for what a good GM looks like at this stage in the offseason, comparing to other teams that made the playoffs, is doing what he needs to do. And he's in his bag. He's working his plan and it's working out. There's some people that maybe don't understand it or don't like that it's not flashy, but he's doing enough right now, in my opinion. I'm not mad with what he's done so far. Looking specifically at the signings, which one is your favorite so far of this group that the Texans have signed?
Well, first, I want to take a stab at the large stuff that you spoke to.
I gave you a lot. Sorry.
You gave me a lot. But even before that, I do want to talk about the bourbon in my hand here. I normally drink the Texans wins. I feel like the free agency period has been a win. I know James said it was the minimum. I think they could have done way less and just went to the draft and tried to answer it that way. They went out and spent money, moved money around. This is Walcott. You can get it at Total Wine. It's the Rick House blend. Phenomenal stuff. Best bang for your buck. Super cheap. Anyway, I believe what Brandon said. I believe that Braden Smith is a guard and he moved to tackle out of necessity. I believe that there is a scenario where he is your left guard and they play Trent Brown and they still draft a guy that sits. You know what I mean? I think Wyatt Teller would be a luxury. I don't think it's a requirement. I could see them, you know, really going, look, we paid these guys to start. I mean, I don't know that $7 million for Trent Brown is starter money, but, you know, it's not nothing. So to be the swing tackle, that's kind of, I think it's kind of pricey. You probably could have drafted a guy. So that makes me feel like they want him to start. I think you definitely need to start Braden Smith with the money you paid him. So I think they may have their line minus the center. And to me, I think the Braden Smith deal is the best deal. Don't get me wrong. I love the trade for David Montgomery. And I think that's splashy. I know you said they didn't make splashy moves. I really think it is. I think it's just not to the level that, you know, Danielle Hunter was, that sort of thing. But I love the David Montgomery move. He's motivated. He said he wanted to come to Houston. You get a guy that wants to be there and buys in immediately, it's dangerous, super dangerous. So for me, that is a huge move. But the line has been all we've ever talked about. And to re-sign the right side and then turn around with Ed Ingram and Trent Brown and then go get Braden Smith, I think, to play left guard. I don't know if that's going to happen. Maybe not. It just seems like the right thing to do. And then you're not forcing a young guy. You're not worried about risking your franchise quarterback because you've got a veteran line. I mean, even as young as Andrews is, he's got some experience now where it's not like new starter, that kind of deal. So I love the Braden Smith sign. I think it's so big. I know there was worries about, you know, health and mental concerns. I think that's with everybody, but the bottom line is that dude, when he's on the field, is a monster. And you know, he's excited to come here too. He was interviewed and he's viewed Houston as a great scenario, loves being in the AFC South, loves what the Texans are building. So Braden Smith for me is the one. Although honorable mention that I think we're going to be talking about a lot is part of the exciting whites, and that's Reed Blankenship. I think he's going to be great.
That's my answer right there. I think that I agree with you. I think anyone who's a Texans fan looks at the Braden Smith signing that, you know, and Brandon Halam makes a good point here. $30 million for three starting offensive linemen in free agency is crazy. And an important note there is I think a lot of people are disregarding the Ed Ingram signing because it's a re-signing. It's free agency. The Texans took a guy that was going to be on the open market and they brought him back. He's a starter who, by the way, last offseason, in an offseason where the Texans were criticized for not making any big moves along the offensive line, Cam Robinson being their big move, trading a seventh round pick for Ed Ingram and then turning him into a quality starter is huge value. And that's why you can never judge an offseason based off of what is happening in it, only by what it produces in the following season. So we'll know a lot more later on down the line. But to speak to Reed Blankenship, I think it's a great signing because safety is a huge need for this team. Now, I won't go as far, you know, Dylan, our good friend, Texans County, Dylan Delgado, had tweeted that it was like the second highest need for the team. I won't let sensationalism take over my take on this. It's a really good signing. It meets a need for the team. I would say it's a need, and it's something that now the Texans don't have to look at doing in the draft. It's good value on a player that's a proven starter. It's everything you would want for a group like the Texans defense that is full of proven guys and a group that dominated last year. You don't want to just suddenly throw a rookie in there and create a weak spot. You're not creating a blind spot by putting Reed Blankenship back there. So I like that signing a lot. I know some people will look to Jalen Reed, MJ Stewart, guys that had a significant time starting for the Texans last year in that spot. I mentioned weaknesses just a second ago, but in a group that was so strong everywhere else, they were able to make up for any shortcomings that could have been brought up by starting guys like that. But bringing in Reed Blankenship truly feels like patching a very medium-sized hole on a mighty, mighty war vessel, making it ready to go and just absolutely annihilate anyone in its path. So I love the Reed Blankenship signing. Another note, this is a trade the Texans made, and I tweeted about this, but I need to put it out here right now for all my HEB people. Kai Kroger traded by the Texans to be their punter. Tommy Townsend's out. It would be criminal for HEB to not at least try to get Kai Kroger onto their commercials just to say even Kroger likes HEB. I think it'd be great. I don't know how it may be too niche. There may be not a lot of people who recognize the Texans punter, but I think it'd be hilarious. So that's just my small side note. We got a few comments, and then I have another question for you after that. Someone on Instagram, Arya Patel, 451 says, "We need Wyatt Teller." I think we both adequately addressed how we feel about that. I mean, it would be a great move. And one of the reasons is that I think Wyatt Teller's on a downturn in his career. He's been a quality guard for a lot of his career. I would say it started about 2 years ago when in 2024, 2025, there was a huge downturn. That being said, we always talk about not using PFF grades to judge players. I feel like the O-line is really one of the big exceptions to that, because it's one of the few things we have to really quantify what we're seeing in offensive linemen. There is still obviously the need to use the eye test to judge that in a way, but as you know, I'm not watching all 32 offensive linemen or offensive lines run, but in a league where there's 64 guards that start, Wyatt Teller goes from being number two, number one, to 3 years ago, he was like top 10. And then over the past 2 years, he's been 32 to 36. He's just like falling off relative to where he was, but he is still a starting level guard in this league. So I think a team that needs that level of play can't look at that and be like, oh, we don't need that. Like if Wyatt Teller will come and the money's right, which looking at it, the Chargers and Giants are in on him right now, is what the reports are, and the Texans. With that competition, there could be a certain trend in his pricing that could price him out of the Texans. And that's why I wouldn't be mad if the Texans didn't go after him, because I'd know that Nick Caserio assessed the price and determined that it was probably better to use that money elsewhere. And Joel Bitonio is still on the market. I think he's a true left guard, and I think he'd play out really well there. But other comments, CJ Stroud equals playoff wins. Depends on who you ask. Oh, there you go. For other teams, he added in a second comment. For now, I mean, we'll see. I think there's still room for improvement, so I'm not going to count CJ out yet, but it was not a good end to last season. Let's see. And then Brandon dropped a few dimes for us here. It says, fans told Caserio Reed should start opposite Bullock all offseason. I don't think they meant Blankenship. Yeah. All right. And then Braden Smith, Blankenship, Foster Moreau, and Kroger are our exciting whites. The exciting whites have left Philly and they're coming to Houston. What a time. And there's an aisle at the Total Wine store if you're looking for some exciting whites. I think that's where the sign is from. But my other question for you, Tom, is this. The Texans obviously have signed players. They've made some trades. There are some players that have left signing with other teams in Tim Settle, Christian Harris, Tommy Townsend. Of those three players, and there's obviously other players that left, whether it was, you know, cut or traded, what player do you think is going to be missed the most of that group?
I think it really depends on what they do in the draft. It's easy for me to go Tommy Townsend because he was very good while he was in Houston. I know it wasn't a long time, but he was very good. And, you know, we don't know a ton about Kroger. We've seen some clips. I know Houston Stressens has kind of went in depth on that because that's the kind of guy he is. But I mean, that's kind of relative unknown. I know the Texans had him in for like a tryout or something, you know, season before last. So I mean, there aren't any of those guys that I'm going, you know, like that's going to hurt a lot. Ironically for me, the guy that I wish of all the guys that was still here would have been Joe Mixon. I mean, Joe Mixon ran the rock really well for the Texans while he was healthy. I am super excited about David Montgomery, but I just hate that that's how it ended with Joe Mixon. You know what I mean? I wish you know, whatever this mysterious injury was solved, and, you know, he could have got healed, because there were times when, you know, I felt like the Texans were a Joe Mixon away from, you know, this football game or that football game, or even in the playoffs. I mean, you could have made the argument, because he had so much juice and was a leader, got those guys fired up. I don't know where they get that now. They need another guy to come in and be that alpha. CJ's not that yet. I think he's got moments where, you know, he's kind of, but I mean, you'll catch Joe Mixon on Twitter, you know, out here, you know, saying it with his chest. Tim Settle was kind of that guy. So maybe that'll be another thing that's lost, where they're going to have to find that energy. Maybe it's Will Anderson after a, you know, monster extension. I don't know. But that for me, that's
on that one. Wait, yeah, that news to break.
For any me, moment. That's any second, any hour. For me, that's the big thing. Just the guys that were like the vocal leaders. That's, I think they're going to miss that the most.
Yeah, for me, it's like Tim Settle. When I think the catchphrase for this whole discussion is "when healthy." I think you could say any one of these guys outside of Tommy Townsend, it's a "when healthy" discussion. Looking at Tommy Townsend, you said he was really good while he was here. I feel like the punter position is a position the Texans are walking by faith and not by sight, because every known statistical metric for punters points towards each of the punters, both outgoing and incoming, not being worth having on the team. Tommy Townsend took a huge nosedive before he left KC, wasn't necessarily super stellar while he was here. And then Kai Kroger in his rookie season was like 28th in the league in most measurable metrics that punters have. The Texans have a history, a great history of like Shane Lettler, I just saw his name because he signed up with the Steelers again. Cameron Johnston. They have a history of punters that statistically and just evidently in the game have been game changers for this team. And I feel like maybe they're counting on rookie potential. I mean, looking at Kai Kroger at the college level, he's all pro, excellent punter. And so that potential is still there. But I feel like the Texans are just kind of like, hey, Frank, who would you like to be kicking the rock for us if we don't convert on fourth down or on third down? And that's who they got, I guess. It's just a pick swap. I'm not super concerned about what was paid, or honestly, I hate to say it this way, because I do understand the importance of having a great punter, but I don't think that Tommy Townsend, good or bad, had a significant impact on the game in a negative direction all season. Even like, I think there was maybe a couple punts I could look at where I'm like, that one didn't come off the foot very well, and it kind of set up the defense poorly. But the defense was so good that like offense and special teams could just take turns punching them in the gut, and it seemed like they just kept the Texans in the game. So, I mean, I don't know. Looking at it, like, so all the other players that walked, like Christian Harris specifically, I think for me, is one where it's like, what if, because Harris County, great nickname, his rookie season, excellent, truly, like, I think that was, it's funny because that was really, I think, what set people down the direction of like, D'Amico Ryans is a linebacker whisperer, he just needs his proteges, he can make anything happen. Like, look at what he did with Christian Harris, who had been with the team before D'Amico got there. And the, you know, I guess not his rookie, I said rookie season earlier, but in his first season with D'Amico, he looked really good. And a lot of people attributed that to D'Amico's coaching. So I think if his health carried on, we'd be talking about how huge of a loss this is, because the Texans should have given him an extension. Like they're going to give Azeez Al-Shaair. That's the rumor right now, is that they're working out an extension with him, an extension with Will Anderson Jr. And with every bit of defensive news, everyone on Twitter who doesn't understand that teams need to maintain and improve all facets of the game, even if you are truly excellent at defense, will shudder and scream about how awful Nick Caserio is as a GM. To speak to your point earlier about Nick Caserio not really having many haters, like everyone I've seen hate on Nick Caserio this offseason are people that have been like, why are we not doing more for the offense? The offense needs the help. Why are we not doing more? And then an offensive signing happens and it's like, well, why is this the signing? Why isn't it a different guy? And then it's like another defensive move. Why? How am I to be excited about how great this defense is when the offense hasn't been adequately addressed 2 hours into the offseason or 2 hours into free agency? So it's interesting to say the least how everyone processes in real time. And that's why it's called, fan is short for fanatic. I mean, people will have their reactions in the moment, and I'm guilty of that at times, but it just feels really early in the offseason to be having these, why is the offense not magically fixed right now takes. It just is a little insane, at least to say the least. But outside of that, the Texans, they made a lot of trades, made a lot of moves. This team has shuffled quite a bit. I think a lot of people got really worried early in free agency. And by that, I mean on Monday when the bell rang and we were able to legally tamper. The Texans unloaded the clip with re-signings. They unloaded the clip with trades pretty much right before free agency started. And then kind of for a moment there felt like they froze or didn't make any really significant moves. But I think that's since been remedied. I'm looking at this. Look at this list. Re-signings, Ed Ingram, Sheldon Rankins, additions, Reed Blankenship, Dominique Robinson, Braden Smith, Logan Hall, Kai Kroger, Jake Hummel. And then they lost, Tim Settle, Christian Harris, Tommy Townsend, and I guess you could say Joe Mixon. He hasn't re-signed anywhere. I mean, it's moves. They're adding a lot of players and they're trimming the fat. This is a really good team. There's only so many slots that can fit more players that aren't already on the team. So I don't know if everyone's like looking for a massive, what it is, if the Texans had signed even Braden Smith, but like literally any offensive lineman that was worth his salt blocking, and like even Wyatt Teller, if it was possible at the start of free agency, if we had gotten an announcement, the Texans have spent $1 trillion on this offensive lineman. He is the best. If they had signed Tyler Linderbaum and did nothing else in free agency, everyone would be like, this is the greatest free agency ever. But they wouldn't be able to do what they need to do to maintain the whole team. So I don't know. Just a little frustrating to see how that's unfolding. But nonetheless, that's pretty much where we're at, where I think we're pretty much caught up to speed. You know what's not on my list here that I'm looking at? And a good talking point is the Texans signed Foster Moreau. And I think it's a very fitting signing, given that everyone's mad at them for not fostering Moreau. So Nick Caserio is literally doing what everyone wants him to do in signing Foster Moreau. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I've been James Roy. The Texans are going to the Super Bowl this year. Anyways, how do you feel about that tight end signing? And do you think it precludes the Texans from drafting a tight end?
I feel a whole lot better about that signing than I do about your attempt to make joke of that signing.
Hey, last time I made a joke out of a signing, it was Tim Settle, and he contributed pretty well to this team in the capacity that he had to. So, I mean, maybe I'm foreshadowing Foster Moreau fostering Moreau.
You know, you can say that 100 times and it's not going to sound better.
Where's Stressens? I need Stressens. I wish Stressens was in the chat.
Stressens would be on my side with this one. There's no way
next week
he's buying that.
I've already got a guest booked for the week after, but in April, we're going to have Stressens on the show, and I'm going to tell him that, and we're going to get a Foster Moreau shirt made. It has to happen. I need it.
There's no way he's making that shirt. I mean, I guess it could, but I think the buyer will be you and only you that will be buying this shirt.
I appreciate the joke. Oh, and here, 1 minute. Speaking of dumb nicknames and jokes that I have made, Brandon mentioned this last week towards the end of the show, and I thought it was a really good shout, but he's brought it back up again. Now we have Montgomery County. Number 32 in the backfield, Montgomery County.
you hear the southern draw just come out the back door.
Drop down another octave. I'm not the lowest voice on the planet, but you drop it in
Montgomery County isn't even like that. If you've been to Montgomery County, there's no cowboy there.
Like, it sound the name itself is like Montgomery County, you know. Come on.
So to get back to the signings and whatnot, The Texans did a really good job, man. They were in on guys they didn't get. That's why I really feel like, you know, Nick Casario did a great job. He was in on Elgton Jenkins, who everybody was like, go sign him. They made an offer. He just chose, you know, a little bit more guaranteed money out in Cleveland. Can't fault him for that. So they've literally tried to turn every stone to make that offensive line better. That's why I felt like early in the thing that the Casario haters are kind of quiet. It's kind of hard to argue with what he's done. I really feel like there's been so much real work done to try to fix whatever holes there may be in this roster to give them the best chance to take one more stab before you got to pay CJ money, a chance to get it done.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code NEWS.
I couldn't agree more. And before we get into, we're going to do the mock drafts here in a second, but I'm glad you brought up the Browns offensive line, because I think that's a prime example of what people want the Texans to do. The Browns are just like trading and signing like offensive linemen that could, like, they're like throwing darts at the wall. They're like, the Packers just released their center, we'll get that guy. The Texans, Titus Howard, we'll get him. And then we'll go out and here's another guard. Well, and just throwing darts at the wall until their offensive line has the personnel. And a lot of those signings, they're impressive in, you know, isolated, but like they've added a left guard, and Elgton Jenkins, while he's played center for the Packers, looked a lot better at left guard, but now he's obviously not going to play left guard for them. He's going to stay at center. Interesting all around. Like, it's not even in the same ballpark as like the Texans bringing in Braden Smith and everyone being like, is he a left guard? It's been 10 years since he's played it. It's like, no, this is Elgton Jenkins recently was really good at left guard, saw a noticeable drop off in play at center, and then got signed to his next team into a situation where he's basically going to have to play center. So interesting all around. We got into our mock drafts. I'm excited to see, Tom, I want to look at yours first, but I'm excited to see how each of us viewed free agency and how it affected our mock drafts in general. So we'll start with you, Tom. Right here, we've got Pregnon. We both had Pregnon. You got better value on him because you took him a little later. And then Jacob Rodriguez, two linebackers, two centers, two defensive interior, and a lot of trades. Tom, run us through your mock draft and what your thought process was behind it.
So I've tried to attack these mock drafts with, you know, whatever need and then best available. It's been my approach this whole time. I think guard was always going to be a thing. Even if they went out and got a guy, they were going to want to bring in a guy to kind of mold and bring up to be able to, you know, be the guard of the future or whatever. So for me, it's kind of it almost seems like a foregone conclusion, which makes me think like the Texans absolutely cannot get Pregnon, because he's been mocked to the Texans 87 different ways. So this means they just can't do it, right? They're going to get somebody else. But I'm not going to get away from that. I was able to get great value. Didn't like what I saw at 29, traded out of 28, was able to get more draft capital. So picked up Pregnon in a really good spot. Then next pick, best available linebacker. I feel like linebacker right now, if I had to pick a grouping, a room that probably needs some good young talent, it's linebacker. And it just so happened, my next two picks, linebacker was just really available to me in spots where, you know, and I know we don't necessarily, you know, take PFF at their word, but these guys were graded, you know, higher for PFF than my draft position. So I felt like that was not a bad spot to take them. I really feel like D'Amico is a linebacker whisperer, like we talked about, like James talked about earlier. He was doing great things with linebackers in San Fran before he got to Houston. So I feel like this is his opportunity to take some good young linebacking talent and mold them. My next pick, I went back to the line because I think the trenches is where the team just really needs to be groomed. And I just didn't have a lot of good options. So I took Sam Hecht. I mean, he graded out well. It was, you know, his PFF grade plus or versus where I was drafting was a little, you know, not what I would have liked. I would have liked to stay with that, you know, hey, this is 45. I'm picking 49, that kind of thing. And then I just got in my Nick Caserio bag. I just started moving picks around. Every time I got up to the board, there wasn't something there. I was like, all right, let's get some more picks. All right, let's get some more picks. All right, I'm going to get a 27 pick. You know, I think I did really good for 27, getting a third round and a sixth round in this draft for 27 to start building there. Came back around round three, number 92, another center there. I know it's two centers. It probably seems like a lot, but you know, Jake Andrews may not be the guy. If one of these guys, this is an SEC guy, I think he kind of slipped a little bit. So I took him. Then I really focused on the defensive interior with my next two picks. Guys just kind of around that that number. I kind of had to, you know, reach a little bit for both of them, but I was okay with it because one was a Bama guy. We know Bama is very strong with Houston. So Tim Keenan being able to get him at 128, I thought was a really good move. Another SEC guy with Chris McClellan from Missouri. Don't know a lot about these guys, but you know, the picks graded well. I think overall I got what the Texans would need. Some of these guys may end up being, you know, maybe they're practice squad guys, which is crazy to think with a fourth round guy being a practice squad guy. But that's just how deep this Texan team is. I tried to get the best available players to give them a shot to make this roster, but I know it's going to be really tough.
Yeah, and that was something I called out earlier. It's like a lot of picks to make in the first four rounds, understanding that you'd expect all seven of these guys to make the roster. I think that Pregnon, great pick. I like Jacob Rodriguez a lot. I think that your first two picks are truly excellent. Going linebacker with the second round pick after the Texans just signed a special teamer, that's like linebacker is one of those groups where you have like starters, immediate depth is very thin, and then you have special teamers that can be depth, but you hope they don't have to touch the field as a linebacker. So I was interested in that pick. Going with two centers is kind of justifiable. So in my mind right now, it's Jake Andrews and Jarrett Patterson are technically center depth. When you draft one center, you bump Jarrett Patterson to guard depth. 100%. Like, he's got that flexibility, but Patterson is not your backup center if you draft a center. And if you draft another center, the question is, can that guy bump out to guard? Because you don't want three centers on the roster, unless you're going to cut Jake Andrews, which I think the Texans like him as depth. I think they see room for improvement at center, but I don't think they see him not being on the roster because of his connections to Cole Popovich is probably my biggest reason. As far as defensive interior goes, Logan Hall signing makes it to where getting defensive interior guys that late in the draft is, I mean, I guess as a developmental guy is good. I like the Tim Keenan pick. Going with two of them, it makes sense for no other reason than the fact that the Texans just cut Mario Edwards. They just lost Tim Settle. Even with bringing in Logan Hall, having multiple guys come in can make sense, I think. So overall, I like it. I think the grade is high because of where you drafted guys. I'm finding now with PFF that they grade the drafts higher, not necessarily based off need, but like how they've graded the guy and how close you are to taking him where he's graded. So like it, for you, you got an A minus because you were two picks behind on Pregnon. He was ranked 36 for them. So even though his ADP, which I know for a fact is 38, you were spot on with his ADP because he's graded by them higher than that draft position, you're going to get a good grade. But overall, I mean, like I said, the Texans only have so many spots in this draft. I see you adding like four quality players that could potentially start or be high quality depth. When you're as good as the Texans are, that's like the best you can ask for in this kind of draft. So I like it. I do like mine better though. The day that I say I like yours better than mine, be an interesting day. If I haven't already, I can't remember. Maybe I did like one of yours better. I think the first one, I just really didn't like mine and yours was really good. So, with mine, like I said, I stayed at 28th. I think having the fifth year option for Pregnon is worth it. I told you earlier, he's ranked 36, so I didn't get a good grade on the pick, but I got my guy. That's what I'm happy with. It was between him and Lee Hunter at 28. So when Lee Hunter was still there at 38, obviously I went with Lee Hunter. And I took him. I think that that's a quality defensive interior guy, who as a second round pick will have some leeway, but should be expected to step into a starting role either this season or sometime next year. And even at defensive interior, if you're not a starter, the rotation that the Texans run is so strong that, like, you could get significant run and be worth a second round pick without starting a single game in that room, I feel like. At this point, I reached a little bit on Jake Slaughter. I had decided that this is a stretch of the draft where I said, I have positions that I really want to get, and I have guys that I like, and their rank may not jive very well with, like, where I'm picking, but instead of trying to trade around in the draft to get to good value, I'm just going to take the guy that I want. So I went with Jake Slaughter, who ranks a little bit behind Keelan Rutledge. So I could have had either one at the next pick, but I decided to take Slaughter. And then I traded back from which pick is that? I traded it back from 59. And so I did that before I took that pick. I did that one when I was at 59 on the clock. I traded back to 86. I also picked up a future third and a fourth round pick. I thought that was a pretty good haul for this, a second round pick. Took Keelan Rutledge at 86. I like that pick a lot. At this point, that's depth, but it's like strong depth. And I feel like in a room where it has felt like at points, it's already not great at the top for a few years now. And there's been moves made, and I feel like we're in a lot better place, but in a group where, like, injuries have been super detrimental because the next man up is not ready to be that guy. I think taking a Keelan Rutledge in the third round, a guy who a lot of people view as a starter, and stashing him as depth. And it could be a Kirk Cousins RG3 situation where, like, Pregnon and Rutledge come in and you're like, well, we actually really like Rutledge a lot better. And I wouldn't be mad about that, but I'm not saying that would be the case. But I think bringing in two guys of that caliber means no matter what happens, you're going to have Jarrett Patterson and insert the other guy as quality depth for this team.
Sir, I got to stop you right there. If you draft a guy at 28 and the guy you get at 86 takes his job, you are going to cook Nick Caserio on this podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, but the point is that I want to come away from this draft with a starting left guard. Because right now this draft is predicating on the fact they haven't added one. They haven't added Wyatt Teller. That pick at 86 goes a lot differently if Pregnon's coming in. And is because here, let's put the shoe on the other foot. We take Pregnon at 28 and then sign Wyatt Teller before that. And then starting the season, you hear Wyatt Teller starting at left guard, Pregnon's depth. Are you mad about that? Because I just talked earlier in the podcast about how Pregnon is a kind of guy who I could see starting, but also I think would benefit from being behind a veteran for some amount of time. That way, when he comes in ready, you know?
I think you got to trade back at that point. I think you got to trade back at that point. Like I don't think you take a guy 28 that doesn't start for your football team. If you don't feel
like... I wouldn't mind trading back. I like what you did. I like where you took him. But I think if you like your guy, if you're like Pregnon, if Pregnon's your guy, taking him at 28, taking him at 38, either way, you're getting your guy. Is it worth risking moving back 10 spots that maybe he won't be there?
See, I made the move going, if I get Pregnon, cool. If I get Jennings Dunker, cool. Like, I can't, and I think that's why PFF kills you on your grades, is because you reach in a spot where I think you don't have to. Like there are options that you could get that would fill your need and still be very, very good serviceable players at that position to go and get a guy 10 spots ahead when there's two or three other guys that you could get at the same spot. That's why I think PFF dings you. And that's why I went out and, you know, had 47 trades and ended up with all the players that I did, because it just seemed like that was the move to make to be more beneficial in the long run, to have more bullets in the gun to go check it out. I think in a perfect world, if the Texans are cooking like I was able to cook, man, they're trading for 27 picks over and over and over again. And just, all right, we're just going to get the best players, or we're trading up and we're trading some of that depth away. It just, you know, I can't see them picking a guy at 28 that does not start.
I think it's a fringe situation, but to the point of like PFF grading, that's why I've taken a firm stance after watching the past few drafts, watching how Caserio drafts, but also watching how every GM in the league drafts. They're going to go get their guy. If they deem the risk worthwhile, they'll make the trade back. But like, you know, Juice Scruggs was not projecting as a second round pick when Nick Caserio went after him. Was it a successful pick? No. But that's when it looks.
And really that was bad. A James Roy move in that point. He took the guy that he thought that was okay.
It's a James Roy move because it's a Nick Caserio move. But he has also gone above and beyond to pick players that were not grading where he has them. And those players are now significant contributors for this Texans team. So it goes both ways. It's high risk, high reward. And you'll always get, you'll get lambasted if you go after a player that was grading lower when you could have traded back and gotten him at better value or taken him with one of your other picks. But if that player does really well and someone comes in and swoops up and takes him, I'm looking at Tyler Booker, I'm looking at Tate Ratledge, both guys that graded per PFF several picks back from where they were taken. And the Texans had opportunities to reach on those guys and would have filled a very clear and present need at the guard position. Not with Tyler Booker. Tyler Booker was taken so incredibly much higher than where the Texans were. But it's just an example of where teams that see a guy that they want that's going to fill a need for them, they don't look at a chart and go, oh, well, we're the Cowboys. We're at the 12th pick. Tyler Booker, in our mind, is the guard of the future and will be our guy. But PFF says that he doesn't go off the board until 30. So we're going to trade back. And then, oh, shoot, the Lions like Tyler Booker too, and they took him with the next pick. Oh. Where the Cowboys actually took him at 12 when he was grading as a perfect fit for the Texans late in that draft. So it's just, I don't know. For me, I'll take flack for drafting the way I do in my mock drafts, but I'm going for it because I see a guy that I think is going to fill a need for the team. I don't like, that's like the whole discussion around trading for David Montgomery. Like, sure, you can talk about how a fourth round pick is a lot for a running back entering his eighth season, but if David Montgomery comes out and totes the rock and does his thing, no one's going to look back and go, but we spent a fourth round pick on him. That would be the dumbest thing ever. But I mean, if he doesn't do well, the first thing people are going to say is, I can't believe we gave up a fourth and seventh round pick and Juice Scruggs. They'll throw Juice Scruggs in there as if they care that he was traded for David Montgomery. I can't believe we gave up all those assets for such a bum or whatever. So it works both ways. And I mean, you look at the whole back part of my draft, getting back into that. Emmett Johnson ranks 131. I got a D for that pick. I needed a running back. That was the best running back available at that pick. I went with that. I didn't like any of the other players around there. To go best player available there would have meant picking a player that would have had trouble making the roster. So I had to keep that in mind and temper it. I like Tarian York. I would have taken him at 106 if I didn't have any other option. That was next man up. But he is also ranking similarly to Emmett Johnson. I like him a lot because of his pass coverage grade. He's a solid run defender at linebacker, but as a box guy, he is like pretty much the opposite of Henry Toa. He can actually track in coverage. So I'm normally not huge on the A&M prospects, but Tarian York would be fine by me. And then at 128. Tackle depth to me is fine. This could be a situation where you take JC Davis. You know, I don't know what the guarantees look like on Trent Brown's contract, but you get through camp and you're like, Braden Smith's our right tackle. And I don't know how they feel about Blake Fisher either, but like, you know, JC Davis would basically be challenging to be the fourth tackle in the room, in a room that's Ursary. Right now it's Ursary, Blake Fisher, Trent Brown, and Braden Smith. And so you're looking for a guy who maybe pushes his way into that room. Could be a practice squad guy. Who knows? At that pick, I probably want to push back and pick him a little in the fifth round if I'm going to make him practice squad. But that was the guy I saw who fit best for what the Texans are trying to do. Excellent pass blocker at Illinois in a conference that it's not like Illinois is a trash team. They're really good in a Big Ten conference. And then he grades out really well as a gap guy. And that's number one thing I'm looking at with all these offensive linemen is, are they grading out well as a gap run blocker. And then pass blocking is a nice bonus. And that's why, you know, Vega Ione is like ideal, but like Keelan Rutledge and Emmanuel Prignon are both grading out really well. Jake Slaughter, it was between Jake Slaughter and Connor Liu. Jake Slaughter graded out a little bit better in the gap scheme and just as a pass blocker in general. So, but yeah, so I mean, love it or hate it, I'm going to go get my guy. This is one of my best. I was like, as soon as I finished this mock draft, I said, this is one of my best graded mock drafts. It actually says top 55% instead of bottom. And I was like, watch, Tom's is going to be graded because of the way you draft. Like, yours is going to be graded so much better than mine. And you were like, top 39%. I was like, oh, great.
Listen, I'm not knocking your mock. I if you like those guys, they could be great. They could be great football players for the Texans. What I will say is the way you have mock draft these last couple times, you, and I can say this because we've done podcasts for as long as we have, you would be very critical of your mock drafts. You would come back and say, you know, there were other guys. You did it earlier with the offensive line stuff. There were other guys that they could have taken, and why did they reach for these guys? And I think that's I'm trying really hard when I mock to channel my inner Nick, don't reach. Nick, take the best. You know what I mean? So that when we come back in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, we're not saying, hey, well, they could have took this guy and they, instead they reached for a dude that was, you know, 10 or 15 picks back. They could have took him with their second pick, you know, been hypercritical of how they went about their business. I love your commitment to it where you're like, look, I'm going to get my guy, because I think that's what you have to do when you're drafting. I think that's what makes this so hard, and that's why it doesn't necessarily work. It's not a perfect science. You can't just go and this is what it says, that's who I'm going to get, he's going to be great. No, you have to be convicted in that pick and the process that you're okay, this is why I think he'll be great. For me, I really hope that the Texans are taking the best available player, and it's really about, okay, if we have a fringe need, we fill it. But if not, just go get studs, all the studs, and let them like duke it out for roster spots. Make it to where, like when you pick that tackle, like you said, make it to where you're thinking about cutting Trent Brown because you have somebody coming in.
Yeah, I mean, I feel you. For me, like my mentality is like, so for example, in your shoes, Jacob Rodriguez, great pick. And then I get to the next pick. If the best guy on the board is a linebacker and I keep going down the line and I'm not seeing positions that are needs for the Texans and I go down, I heavily consider trading back. But if I get down and let's say Sam Hecht is ranking at 73, I'm at pick 59, center is a huge need, and I've reached a point where this is the next best option, I can wait till pick 69, or I can, you know, draft him there instead of Galladay because he's actually a need and I'm not doubling down on linebacker. I would have trouble bringing myself to double down on positions like that. But I like your mentality. I like the, you know, get the best possible guy. And at center, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, defensive interior, you can never have enough good interior defensive linemen. And at center, you hope you get some flexibility out to guard and get two guys that can contribute significantly along that offensive line. Even linebacker, like I said, you can look at the special teams contribution. You can look at a lot of things. And
look,
and
one of those guys could replace Dare. We could be talking about Jake Galladay, the guy that made Dare Ogunbowale non-relevant.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I don't hate your mock draft. It's just not, and I think that's the key thing. We both understand that, like, we draft differently. And so, like, the way you draft is not the way that I would do it, and the way I draft is not the way that you would do it. But I like that because I think it means we capture different aspects of like what it means to draft. Like, you know, and I think we both in a way capture different parts of what Nick Castillo is looking at. So I could see our mock drafts like kind of meshing together to make what Nick Castillo is going to eventually put on the field. I like how many trades you do. I sometimes I'm like, I could probably do a trade here, but like I've already done a couple trades. I don't know. But it's like
I had Nick my Casario first trade denied. There. Like up until today, all of them went through. Today was the first time they're like, nope, that won't work. Fix it. So I want to say the trade for 84, I sent 82 and I think I tried to get like 152 and they kicked it back. So I asked for 200 and I got it.
Nice. What I've started doing is I pull out there's a chart that officially values each pick. And so I've started using that in order to put together like my trades. And then if PFF, more times than not, it's like this trade will be easily accepted. And I'm like, great, the values align. But sometimes they're like, this one has a 50% chance. And I'm like, if I'll give it three tries, if it denies me three times, I'm going to force it because this trade is good. I have officially vetted this trade and the simulator is not going to tell me that this trade's not going through because I can make this happen. But before we go, we got a couple comments down in the chat. It says, defense is pretty covered at this point. Draft should be offense heavy. I mean, I agree to an extent, but I think both Tom and I can agree that like, if there are needs on both sides of the ball in some way. And so like, for example, like for Caleb Banks has broken his foot. He's at the top defensive tackle out of Florida. And I think he's great. If he fell to 28, I would take him easily. Do I think the Texans need to use their 28th overall pick on defense, given what they need on offense? Not necessarily, but like if that's the best player there, it's a huge need on the defensive side of the ball. And it sets you up with still like a good, as it stands, the Texans still have three or four picks that are in that sweet spot in the first four rounds where you can still get quality players and you fit a huge need with a quality player. I mean, so I'm about getting quality players. I'm not going to limit myself to, should I pick a defensive player with where the offense is at? Like, it's just never going to be. Never going to be where I'm at. And then let's see. The only position I would double down on is offensive line. I think everyone agrees with that to some extent, but, that's what mock drafts are for. You're going to draft the way that you're going to draft. So like, yeah, you could double down on offensive line on your mock draft. And then someone says, what if we need an emergency kicker when you, referenced, Dario Gumbawale earlier? So that's that. Let's see. I go to Wikipedia to see trade values in previous years. Yeah, I mean, I literally just looked up draft pick trade chart, and then I found the website that like officially evaluates each draft pick at a number value. And I'm like, okay, well, a third round pick plus a second round pick is going to put me at the right amount. And I try and skew those slightly in favor of the Texans too. So some people might think it's like getting too much in return, but I'm always going to try and win the trade. Then a Mercedes might be great too, until it never starts when you want to drive it. Don't let Banks be the car that never starts. I feel you on that, but I just think that's just a prospect. Like, I would be mad about it if we missed, but like, I would understand it. I would be like, yeah, Caleb Banks. That's like back when the Rockets took, at 19, they took, what was his name? There was a player that was like projecting top five and then slipped way out to like number 19. And they took him.
Yeah, he plays for Washington now. And I can't think of his name either. But he was good.
But he could shoot the ball. I would never be mad at the Rockets for taking that swing. And this is a similar situation. If Banks just didn't pan out, I'd be mad about it. But like, the only time I would be like specifically super mad about it and like it would be unacceptable is if they passed up on a need like Pregnon or another guard type prospect that I was really high on. And then at 38, that player was gone and they couldn't take him. And then they continued to struggle across the offensive line. But like, I think this draft is just so rich with offensive line prospects and they've done so much in free agency already to address that like, I don't think the odds are high that that's what happens. But on that note, Tom, do you have any final thoughts before we kind of bring this thing to a close?
I really appreciate y'all. Y'all showed up, checking us out. It's been fun doing these mock drafts with y'all and really talking. Obviously, Brandon, the GOAT, appreciate you every Thursday.
The GOAT.
We can definitely count on you here. And I know you're in a lot of other chat rooms and stuff, seeing you with stress and stuff like that. So that's cool that you take the time to stop by. Just really appreciate y'all. I mean, off seasons can get a little, vanilla and everything's the same. So, for y'all to come check us out, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, and one final thought from me, because Gio Escobar just commented, I think he's like the 30th person to comment Wyatt Teller in the chat.
We talked about it earlier
in the show. I think we're both in agreement. It would be great to bring him in, but I don't think that it would be the end of the world if the Texans proceeded without him. It would just change the approach. So, oh, let's see. I hate the way it does this. It stacks the Twitter comments on top of the YouTube ones. So,
so you never see them?
So I'll put this one up. Thank you, Arkazens, for commenting this. I wish I would have noticed it before, but I did not.
I referenced it earlier.
Oh, you did. Okay. So you were keeping up with the Twitter comments. Good, 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 good. But yeah, so thanks for tuning in. Always fun. As much as I love seeing the Texans make deep runs in the playoffs, one of my favorite parts of football in general is the offseason in terms of like free agency and the draft. That's probably because as a Texans fan early on in my life, there just wasn't a lot to see in the postseason. So I had to find something to be excited about. But you guys probably understand that all too well. So thank God the Texans are good, but let's hope they get better this offseason. We'll be here to talk about it weekly throughout the offseason, except for next week. And obviously if anything else comes up, but next week I'm going to be at the rodeo. So won't be going live next week, but after that we'll have, let me look it up. I have it in my inbox. We have like a guest list shaping up, but, Abdul Maman covers the UFL, which starts March 27th, your Houston Gamblers.
Go gambling, baby.
So he is covers the UFL, wants to spread awareness for the team prior to the start of the season, which is so on the 26th, we'll have him on the show to talk UFL action so you guys can get filled in on what's going on. You know, our spin around H-Town, sports that we do. So we'll have him on for that. And then after that, we're trying to get Houston Stressons on early April. And then, oh, I forgot about that. Titans new uniforms. Wow, really cool. Their post says Titans blue. That's an interesting way to address a color that looks like that, because it's not Titans blue. I would have accepted Columbia blue. I mean, that's like at least accurate to what the color is, but oh, well, I think they like slightly altered it and like changed the name so they don't have to call it Columbia or H-Town Blue or whatever. But I don't know if you see it. This is my signed CJ Stroud jersey that's in Columbia Blue. So pretty sick. People thought that I was unveiling a new Texans jersey. It turns out I was just a little too early to calling out that the Titans were, after saying they weren't going to use the Oilers jerseys anymore, basically just redesigned their jerseys to be Oilers jerseys. But oh, well. And you notice they got rid of the flames and the T. I don't know. There's parts of the font that make me think they're trying to make it look like an oil derrick. It's like interesting to say the least. But on that note, I have been James Roy, and Tom here has been with me. I'm at James Roy NFL, wherever you get your social media. Tom is TC Tom1 on Instagram and Third Coast Tom on Twitter. And we are The Bullpen, a Houston Texans podcast, the number one veteran run Texans podcast in the entire United States, maybe even further. And we enjoyed talking Texans with you today. Tune in not next week, but the week after. You can catch us talking some more Texans football. Until then, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans. Thanks for tuning into The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.